Move the mic there closer to Susie so she can give us her wisdom of the ages.
Yes, because I'm older now, I have many ages behind me. So mine is, he who takes offense when no offense is intended is the one creating the problem.
Yeah.
Now, as an office manager at the refugee center, people come to me and complain about
different
people.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And so I have this one lady, and she's always taking offense. And there we have this one guy, and he's a little soft-headed. He you have to tell him exactly what to do and how to do it and everything. And she came up to me and said, he was so rude. He was doing this and that and everything. And I'm going, did he do it on purpose? Did he have intention of malice? Well, I don't know. Did he mean to do it? No, I don't know, but she kept going on and on. And so, and then I have other people, they come up and they'll say, this guy did this. And that's the first question I ask is, do you think he did it intentionally? Do you think he meant to do it? And that gets them thinking. Well,
that's a
I
really
don't
good
know.
Question to ask him.
Yeah, did he mean to do it? And so, even with my children, they have a problem with their dad, and he does things that just bothers them. But so I'll have to tell him, do you think he meant to do it that way, the way you were taking it? And sometimes it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether he meant it or not. He still did it. You know, well, did you talk to him about it? No. Is he going to continue doing it? Yes. Until you point it out. Sometimes people say things that are hurtful, and they don't know that they're saying it that is hurtful. And sometimes they do mean it. There's little prickers that over there that they just like to...
They take glee in the sense of
people. They do. They will kick you in the shin every time that they can just to get a chuckle, or they think it's funny, but it's not funny. You know, and I heard, 80% of the times you say, I'm kidding, you're really not kidding. You are saying it, and then you say kidding just to... get out from under it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be careful when you are offended. Did this person actually, was their intention of malice? And usually no.
What percentage of offenses do you think were unintentional?
Oh, like think a lot of them are unintentional if they are consistent. So like if the person does it to everybody, then that's in their nature, and don't take it personal.
Yeah.
If they're picking on just you, and everybody knows it, gosh, he's really picking on you, then there's malice.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, and I say that too, you know, he's like that with everybody, not just you, so it's not personal.
Yeah.
And so if you have a problem, it's rude to everybody. And so you can't take it personal. If you have a problem, you need to talk to him, point it out, and so that. And they say, "Well, I talked to him." And I said, "When was the last time you talked to him?" "Oh gosh, 6 months ago, and he's still doing it." Yeah. Well, then it didn't sink in. You have to say, like I had a friend who's always breaking dates, and I'll go, "Okay, I'm all ready. Go kayaking. What time are you picking me up?" "Well, not today. We made plans, you know." And so then I'll get after her, and she goes, "Well, I don't do it very often." So I started pointing them out. And pretty soon, "Well, man, I do break a lot of dates, you know." Or she goes, now she just says, "Well, as you probably suspected, we're not going to do it."
Not changing her nature.
Not changing
her,
to let you know that you were right. So... so you have to be careful.
At least she's aware there's a problem now.
Mm-hmm. Didn't want to fix it. She's complacent.
Yeah, now
where's
I just...
the rock strokes?
You're right, I do that, and I'm doing it again today. So yeah, you
that
have
to...
That
reminds me, when I was on my mission, it seemed like every... And who's all been on a mission here? Curtis? Now, did you guys find that when you were with a companion, after about 6 weeks, there was several things in them that started to really get on your nerves?
It didn't take 6 weeks.
Yeah, sometimes only took a week. But there was this one companion I had that loved Rodgers and Hammerstein. And when we would go, we would spend a lot of time tracking, which was knocking on doors and trying to get people to listen to us. And as we were walking around, he sang all the time, Rodgers and Hammerstein, which was far from my favorite music. I liked the Beatles and rock and roll, and good Mormons, many of them liked Rodgers and Hammerstein. And I thought, well, that's nice, he's got a good voice. And then after a couple of weeks, it started driving me crazy, and after about the third or fourth week, I thought, I gotta say something. I says, Elder, I says, you've got a really good voice, you do a really good job singing, but it's just about to drive me crazy. Could you please just not sing so much? And he says, it's in my nature. I love to sing. And he just kept singing.
Oh, no.
And so I just had to put up with him. I couldn't get him to quit singing.
Mm-hmm. Can you sing a
but,
song?
Yeah.
He reminds me of myself.
Yeah.
You could have started singing other Beatles songs louder over.
That was a good idea. I should have done that. I should have sung Twist and Shout or something over and over. That would have driven him more crazy than he was driving me.
I want to hold your hand.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
I have to say something because I can relate. Actually, we had Curtis's dad for 2 months.
Yeah.
And I took care of him.
Yeah.
Well, he played the harmonica, and he made up his own song.
Yeah.
On his harmonica. But it was pretty repetitive.
And he started driving you crazy.
That was calling. That
was really because he lost his wife, not their mother, but his second wife, and she passed away a few months
prior.
A few months prior to him coming to live with us, and so it was very melancholy, and it was a short, you know, like a short version. But he would start in at 7 in the morning. And other than when I made him his breakfast, got him his pills, got him his lunch, and got him his dinner, he played that song all day.
Oh,
man.
All day in the morning before his breakfast, at midday, after lunch.
Boy, that's worse than that companion I had.
Well, he did it when he was watching Truckers Stuck in the Mud.
Only for a little while when Curtis was in his room for maybe half an hour, 40 minutes. Other than that, he was playing that song.
Did you ever ask him to cool it?
I would say, you know, I would say to him,
you don't do that.
But yeah. I would say, would you like to watch TV, or are you interested in any books or magazines? No. And then he'd go right back.
Really? That's amazing.
And
you
so, could
have
and
locked
I
him in
care.
His room and...
No, he was in his room.
He was locked in his room.
But he didn't really like to sit.
Could still hear him, huh?
He didn't really like to sit in the front room. He would visit for, you know, an hour and a half. But other than that, he'd go right back in his room. You know, of course, the door open because, you know, I didn't want him to have the door shut in case he fell or something. But... Yeah. By the time 2 months was
up, you were probably glad to see him go back home.
I couldn't hardly stand it. I was like, ooh, go. And I'd go outside, and that's where I started really appreciating the fact that I could water.
You really love nature with him there.
Oh my gosh.
She hated
know?
It before then. And
yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, so yes, I can
understand. Okay, well, good points, yeah. Okay, we'll need to move on. Now let's go over Lena. Susie, can you take the mic closer?
Sure, sure.
Okay, so mine says, to say that life is unfair is to say that God is unfair. When all things are considered throughout the life of the soul, all is fair. And so I guess some of the thoughts that I had was that, first of all, when I was younger, still quite immersed in the church, there wasn't really any explanation for how it would work out, but I always knew deep down that life was fair. You know, people would curse God because of having in their life, and I never understood that because I always knew deep down that there had to be a way. And I kind of knew that there was a law of karma, although I didn't know that's what it was. I just understood that you reap what you sow, basically, right? When it would happen, I wasn't sure. And then years later, as I was on my path of moving away from the church, and I was reading and studying, and I had a really good friend, and we discussed reincarnation quite a bit. But I never could quite connect with it as the world teaches it. It just didn't quite work for me. But then when I finally read JJ's explanation or how that works, and all of a sudden it just all clicked into place, and I finally knew, okay, this is how it works. And I had wanted to know how it works. I'm one of these people that wants to know how it works. And so then it all, you know, fell into line. Okay, this is how life is fair. Because it's not just this life, it's many lives, and in the end, everything will come out.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, I think it was back in the 80s or sometime, when I was young, people used to believe that life was fair, but then really didn't think about it. But then some preacher, and I'm not sure which one it was, come out with he exclaimed, you know, life is not fair. Just deal with it. And that began to catch on. Everybody began to say, well, I guess life isn't fair after all. When you think about it, life is just not fair. That's this way it is. If you didn't believe in reincarnation, you pretty much had to admit that. But, you know, people didn't really admit it, that they all said, well, God is fair. Everything will work out in the end. But then they didn't really think about it. But when they started thinking about it, it's like the masses begin to realize, you know, if we just have one life, it's just not fair. And if that's the way it is, that's just the way God designed it for some reason. But, once you get the whole picture, then you find out life is fair, and, you know, you feel a lot better about God.
Yeah.
When you feel that life is fair.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the greatest arguments for reincarnation are...
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I said this to your daughter, who was deeply in the church, and she was living with us for a bit. And I said, so we were talking about reincarnation. I said, so do you think it's fair that a child is born and maybe only gets to live hours or days and maybe starves to death in a country where there's not enough food or whatever? Is that fair? That's their one chance in life, and they only get to live hours of that life, and that's it? It's like a lottery, and you just lose? And she goes, well, no, not really. And I go, well, what do you think the answer to that is?
It's either there is no God, or...
She thought there's a God, but a loving God. And mm-hmm. I said, how does a loving God allow that? And so she just, I don't know, I guess it's the mysteries, one of the mysteries.
Yeah, they chalk it up to a mystery always.
Yeah.
Oh, right. That's how they explain it, though.
Well, mystery implies that there must be an answer somewhere, but I don't know it.
Yeah.
Well, in Course in Miracles, it says, avoid the temptation to consider yourself unfairly treated.
Yeah. I'm not a victim of the world, I see.
Yeah. I'm a victim. I'm a hopeless victim.